Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start the podcast, I have a Discord community. We have a bunch of conversations on there. I give away free music, give away tickets, give away a bunch of stuff, and also just have a bunch of conversations with everybody on there. If you want to join, link is in the bio. Not in the bio. Link is definitely not in the bio. It's in the description below or wherever you're listening to this on. Also, if you do listen to these regularly, it's very helpful if you give us a review and if you give us a rating. It keeps the podcast going, keeps things interesting, and keeps the guests coming on the show. So I would really appreciate if you do that. So this week on the podcast, Wes Clark, apart from having an amazing surname, Wes, I've actually known Wes for a while. He didn't know I've known him for that long. You'll hear all of that in the podcast. Wes was producer, DJ for many years, had extreme success in the industry as a DJ, as a producer. And whilst he was DJing, decided to kind of get more into the production and the mixing side of things, and has an extremely successful career in the art of mixing, as in making records sound better for people. He's won a Grammy, he's been nominated for multiple Grammys, he's had multiple number ones, and he's also a lovely guy, which is really nice to be around. So yeah, I've really enjoyed this conversation, an hour and a half of just us talking about everything from mental health to the music industry to life outside of music, finances, everything. So yeah, really good conversation. So without further ado, Wes Clark. Wes Clark, it's been a long time, man.
It has. When was the last time?
Mate, honestly, I don't even think you're going to remember ever us meeting.
Oh, we actually met in real life. I don't remember.
Yeah, you won't. No one ever does, because you,
how can I forget you?
Last time you played, you used to play for Head Candy, right?
Yeah.
And you did the summer in Ibiza, or you used to be their one of their residents, yeah, at El Divino.
Yeah.
And also, did you do occasionally at Space Terrace?
Did, yeah.
So you're never going to remember me. But can you remember a guy called Tom Brown who used to work on radio on the island?
No, if I'm honest.
So we used to record DJ sets. Okay. And I used to record you as a DJ.
Did you? No yeah, way.
Years ago. We're talking 2008.
Wow.
2008, 2009. Yeah.
That literally feels like another lifetime to me.
I know, right? Like,
do you know what I mean? It's like my DJ life just feels like another lifetime. Well, yeah, it really does.
It's one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on, because there's so many people that want to be working in music, and it's very easy to, like, especially nowadays, look on social media and go, how do I work in music? And I make music, or I'm technical in the studio, but I actually just don't want to be a DJ. And it's so hard to see that, to see, like, that there's other jobs in this industry to do, and make a living from music. But you've kind of had this, like, classic, you've done it, like, book style, where you're just like, you've obviously had a career in production, in DJ and touring DJ, and then you went into mixing.
Yeah, it seems that way on the outside.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's why I want to talk to you, because it clearly isn't, but tell me.
It seems that way. It seems like I did it by the book, but actually, I was kind of the same. I didn't really want to be a DJ either.
Yeah.
But it got me a foot in the door. I mean, that's kind of a lie. I did enjoy DJing. Everyone enjoys DJing, right? It's it's fun. But and I did start off as a DJ, but I wanted to be a jungle DJ.
Okay.
That was my thing. I just wanted to play at jungle raves.
And jungle to head candy. Where did that happen?
Exactly. It went the opposite direction, didn't it? But I did start as a jungle DJ at sort of around the age of 11, 12, 13. And then 14, I was DJing in nightclubs in Luton, you know, my local town, at jungle raves. And that was, for me, that was my dream then. Do you know, that was it for me. I was like, oh, I'm doing what I want to do. But then it kind of, I didn't become a famous jungle DJ, which was my vision, you know. So I ended up just DJing in my local town on a Friday night, just in the local club. My friends from college owned the club, actually. And I used to play there on Friday nights. And that's how I fell into it, because one night I was warming up for a head candy DJ.
Ah, okay.
You know, it's that classic right place, right time.
Yep.
Just everything fell into place. You know, I was playing some edits that I'd done, and who was there? There was a couple of other people there, like on percussion and that. And it was a wicked night. It was really good. And it just, we just sort of clicked. It was Rob Wilder, actually, who I ended up doing loads of production with. Yeah. And you know, he was like, oh, we should get in the studio and da da da. And I was like, yeah, cool. And then literally a couple of days later, I got a phone call from Head Candy headquarters saying someone's broken their leg. Can I cover for them in The Hague?
Yeah.
I was like, I'd never left Luton. Do you know what I mean? Hague? So that, I was more scared of the flight to The Hague than I was of DJing. You know, I was really scared of flying. But I managed to get over it. And then every week from then on, I was DJing for Head Candy. It was like, literally, I know. Looking back, I was very lucky. Mm. Fortunate, depends what way you look at it.
It's interesting you say that, though, because, like, there's also that, like you said, like, right place, right time. And so much of this industry, I think so much of life is about that, really, especially when you're not, like, applying for a job, if you know what I mean. But even that is still, like, luck of the draw. I think there's a level of luck. But there is, pretty much for everybody I speak to, there's a point where it's, like, right place, right time.
100%. And I guess, to be fair, if you're sat in your bedroom DJing, you're never going to be in that right place. Do you know what I mean? So you need to put yourself out there to a certain degree. I mean, I was sending out, you know, this was in the days, this was around, I mean, my early career, I'm talking late 90s.
Yeah.
I was sending out tapes to record labels, you know, of my music and possibly DATs. No, I think it was tapes. And getting replies saying, you know, this is great, but not for us. Back in the days when they actually wrote back to you, like Universal Records.
Yeah. Were you making Jungle then?
No, I was making some weird stuff. I don't know what I was doing. It was like breakbeat. I was a big fan of Adam Freeland, sort of breakbeat stuff. And I had a couple of tracks out. I had a track out on Ugly Records called What Is Electro, which was, it was like a 4/4 waltz time kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really cool, actually. And I had a couple of things out around 2000, I think that was. And I had a record out on Distinctive Ink Records as well, which did quite well around that time. So, yeah. Actually, I bought my first car with the advance on that. And that was, I was really young. I was like 20 years old. And that made me think, actually, you know, this, I could do something with this. Do you know what I mean? When you actually see sort of some kind of return for your hard work. Because I sat there for hours, you know, making music.
Well, I think that's the thing, isn't it? And I think that's what's, I'd like to get your opinion on what it was then and what it is now as well. Because I think it's all changed with social media, where now DJing, music industry is very, people know you can make money from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost feels like people want it instantly.
Yeah.
And it's not that realization that how many, God knows how many years you did with just slaving away. And like, even to the point where you're at now, if you know, I mean, how many years does it take to actually get to that level where you can actually earn money from that? Do you feel like it was the same back then?
I used to always say you've got to do 10 years before you earn any money.
Yeah.
And to do that 10 years, you have to have a blessed lifestyle. You know, you have to have parents that are going to back you up for 10 years. You know, my mum was great. My dad passed away when I was young, but my mum, she just never told me to get a job.
Yeah.
Ever. Or she never complained about the music. Me and my brother look back and we're like, she must have had some kind of vision for us or something, because the music was insane. Imagine two bedrooms of jungle music.
Does your brother still write?
He used to, and he does now, actually. He's got back into DJing and production now, and he's DJing around. He got me into it. So he's 4 years older than me, and he bought a load of studio gear.
Yeah.
He was 17 and I was 4 years younger, 13. No, that's not right. I was 17, I think, and he was 20, 21 when he bought the proper gear, which I've still got, actually. I don't know if you can see it. Some of the gear behind me is still from that era, and NS10s, they're original. But anyway, he bought this gear and let me have free reign on it, which, you know,
thanks,
was amazing, to be honest. And he did a couple of summers in Ibiza as well, DJing at El Divino. And while he was away, I just got in the studio and got my head down and learnt my trade. And he came back and realised, oh, wow, what's going on here? Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, while I've been away, what's happened here? And he sort of started asking me to help make his record sound, you know, as good as the stuff I was doing. And that's how I kind of got into making other people's records sound good, you know, mixing, which I had no idea was a thing, you know. I didn't, and back then there wasn't any famous mixers. Jeremy Wheatley was the only one I'd heard of, but I didn't really know it was a job.
Yeah.
Especially
in like electronic music.
Yeah.
Like you hear it like in like the pop days, then but it's still, it's still not really like a big thing now.
No,
it is
bigger, isn't it? I mean,
it's way bigger than what it is, but it's like
thousands of mixers now. Thousands.
Is there?
Yeah. thousands.
I guess because
hundreds of thousands.
Because I've like, I don't really use mixers myself. So I'm like in the process of like, I was talking to somebody at a label the other day. I was like, who do you guys use? Like, and yeah, I've just never really looked into how many mixers there are out there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. There's a hell of a lot, you know. And I remember back sort of 10 years ago, there was probably, I mean, it felt like anyway, there was probably five of us in the world. It felt like we were doing everything.
Yeah.
Do you know? That's how I genuinely felt. And now it seems like, you know, a lot of things changed during COVID.
Yeah.
But it feels like a lot of people learned or had to learn to mix. And there's a hell of a lot of people doing it now. And it's kind of become quite fashionable, I suppose. It's like, you know, it's a bit like DJing.
Yeah.
It's cool, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's not that cool, to be honest. It looks cool. It's hard work.
Yeah, it is. I can imagine.
It's hard work.
Let's I want to go back a little bit from Head Candy to the transition of, okay, so you started making people's records, Samba. Start working for Head Candy. What's the transition from Head Candy to, okay, I don't want to be a DJ anymore?
Yeah, so production was always my thing. I bought my first mixer at 11, really, for production purposes.
Yeah.
I wanted to mix. I think it was Terminator or RoboCop soundtrack, like the spoken words with a jungle beat. And I was like, how do I do that? And then I thought, oh, I need a mixer.
Yeah.
This is at 11 years old. Like, this is ridiculous. My dad bought me a mixer. And then I realized with these mixers, it was a Rocklab MRT60 mixer. It was like really old. And I realized people had two turntables with them. So I was like, oh, I need a couple of turntables. So my dad bought me these Memorex turntables with no pitch control. And then at that age, I wired up a pitch control to it with a soldering iron.
Really?
I wouldn't even know how to do that now. I took it apart.
How?
Circuit board. It was a plus and minus printed on the circuit board, and I just wired up a fader on it, and it worked. I was like, I don't know how does these things happen?
I wouldn't have even thought of that.
I don't think anybody thinks about things like that. I don't know what I was doing, but I mean, it's dangerous for a start. but yeah, it worked anyway. So that was what got me into DJing, and then but the transition, I guess, was. It kind of felt natural because it was like, oh, you know, this is Wes, he DJs, but he also produces. Can we use him? You know, and once I was in Head Candy, another twist of fate, got bought by Ministry of Sound two months after I joined.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the guy that headed it, Phil Faversham, was an old friend of mine who I'd worked on a record with. I say friend. I mean, we literally didn't really know each other, but I recognised the name Fab. He recognised the name Wes from, like, you know, 5 years before when we worked on a Danny Minogue record. Randomly, I wrote. This is such a twisted journey I've had. I wrote a song, and Danny Minogue nearly used it. She didn't, but she nearly did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's always such a strange concept as well for people that are listening that aren't in the music industry, like. Can you explain that whole situation when you write a record and somebody might take it or might not?
Yeah. I mean, it was literally, I wrote a whole album actually. And one of the tracks, don't know how it ended up in front of Phil Faversham, but he was looking after Danny Minogue, and they sent her down to demo it, or someone down to demo it, not her. Someone that sounds like her to demo it. I will say no more. It didn't happen in the end for some reason. I don't know why. You know, they probably demo a few and then choose another one. But that would have potentially changed my career path again. You know, I could have gone down songwriting route, I suppose, you know, if that was a hit record. It's funny how life twists and turns, isn't it? But, I feel like I went down the right path. I knew I didn't want to. I'd written this album. Yeah. I'm going back and forth. I'd written this album. This was about 2000. So I was about, I don't know, 19, 20, 21, I don't know. And then I'd written this album, and the major labels were interested in it, like with me singing on this album. Okay. As well.
Can you sing?
Well, auto-tune had just been invented. We had the first Antares box in the country, apparently. Apart from the Spice Girls had one. We had one in the studio. It was a hardware unit.
Yeah.
And you got it with MIDI. Mm. Antares ART1, I can't remember, something like that. And yes, yeah, so I could sing with the aid of auto-tune, as everyone else. But I was quite a good songwriter. I wrote this whole album of electronic pop songs.
Cool.
And but the first question, I think someone from Universal, someone came to meet me, and their first question was, "How do you see your live show?" And I was like, I hadn't even thought about it. Live? I can't sing live.
You've got to sing live.
It was literally the end of the conversation. Do you know what I mean? It was like, all right. So that just never happened. And I thought to myself, I just can't do it. I can't be an artist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I cannot do it. I haven't got the confidence. So I went down a different path. Yeah, and I ended up, you know, DJing my local town and joining Head Candy. And then so Ministry of Sound bought them. And there's Depeche Palmer. Do you know Depeche from Ministry? He's gone on to be head of Columbia, I think. He's a good mate of mine. You know, I've known him for years. We've done so many hit records together now. But yeah, he just started using me on a few things, and David Dolemore as well, who was head of A&R at Ministry at the time. And they just gave me. Just gave me a chance, really. It was Examples was the first thing I really did.
Yeah.
And Kid Cudi, Day and Night, and
was Riverside. That the Crookers remix that you did?
Yeah, the Crookers remix. Yeah, because I don't know what I did on it. I can't even remember what I did. I think I mastered it. It came to me really distorted and horrible, and I just like fixed it.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm good mates with Bot. That's like one half of or used to be
right.
One half
okay. Of Crookers. And I think I did the radio edit on it and a few other bits.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
That was huge, that record.
Massive record, yeah. Yeah, so that was my first sort of taste of, this is quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
and I did Riverside as well.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Who's that by?
Riverside. Sydney Sampson.
Yes. Well done.
Yeah. That's coming back, that record.
Is it?
Mate, I'm hearing it everywhere.
No.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I can't hear that record ever again, please. But yeah, it's coming back.
It just goes, it's a whole new generation. It's what was that, 2011?
Yeah.
Jeez.
10 years ago.
More than 10, yeah, jeez. But
we're old, I think, mate.
Did the vocal version of that, me plus you. Me,
oh, yeah.
I think they recorded that in my studio.
Did they?
I was a jack of all trades at that time. Mm. I was recording vocals. I was, you know, do you remember that song by Bingo Players, Get Up, Rattle?
Yeah, yeah.
The radio version of that with the vocal on and all that. I think they recorded the vocals of mine. I whistled the... that was me whistling. And I did some beatboxing on it as well. I was just like... Whatever it took.
Yeah, but I think this is the thing, isn't it? It's like, it's going back to what we were talking about just like 5 minutes ago, where the whole like 10 years, and it's like, it takes so long to get to the point where you're actually doing exactly what you want and also working out exactly what you want. Because like I know my goals have changed in the last 3 years, in the last year of like what I want out of this career. And I think like, you have to try everything.
100%. Yeah, you have to try everything, and also you have to be you have to try everything for from the respect that you can focus on one thing if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I always think is the key to absolutely smashing it. Focus on one thing. I remember my mate he's now smashing it doing sample replays, and he was doing DJing and all this stuff, and he watched me focus on one thing.
Who's that?
Joe Hal Ritson.
Yeah, Hal's done a few things for me.
Yeah, so he...
He's great.
I'm not taking any claim for his success, by the way. We shared studios space.
Oh, really?
For 10 years. Yeah. And he just watched me focus. He said to me once before, he watched me focus on mixing, and he was like, I'm going to focus on sample replays. And he's absolutely...
He's the best.
He's the best.
He's the best. I've had sample replays done by other people, and he's just the best.
He's the best.
Yeah, yeah.
The best. Yeah, no doubt about it. So, yeah. So I'm totally responsible for his career.
I'll clip that out and send it to him.
Yeah, exactly. And tell him I want a credit.
5%. 5%, mate. Come on, not 1%.
Let's go. Let's go in hard. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, focusing on one thing. So I was, literally jack of all trades. I remember even when I DJed at Head Candy, they used to call me Easy Jetter because I'd fly anywhere. Yeah. I'd be like, Wes will do that. Where's this gig? Columbia? Yeah, Wes will do that. War-torn, I don't know, anywhere with the war. Wes will do that. Yeah, Wes will do that. Antarctica. Yeah, I didn't do that, actually. That was one I said no to.
Wait, Antarctica was actually an offer?
Was it Antarctic or Arctic? One of them. Polar bears?
They're both the same, right? Both cold as fuck.
Polar bears are on one. But anyway, they said to me that someone needs to be next to me with a gun at all times because of the polar bears. And I was like, do you know what? I'll give that one a minute.
Who's raving in the Antarctica?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I've made that story up.
It's a great story, even if you didn't make it up. So it's fine.
Come on, isn't it?
Just roll with it.
Yeah, I'm sure it happened. but anyway, I used to DJ in, Bogota. Have you played in Bogota?
Yeah, I played there. Last year, mate, it's so good.
So good.
I love it. Yeah, Colombian people are the best.
Yeah, but it was so far out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Coming from Luton.
Well, it's just such different cultures, right? When you start traveling around the world. Did it
ever
make you realize how lucky we got it back in the UK?
100%, especially touring around Brazil.
Yeah.
Places like that, seeing the favelas and the sights and the smells around the favelas, and it's and how safe it is here.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable, you're right. And even San Francisco and places like that, the sort of homeless situation, it does open your eyes a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I've lived in the States for like over 10 years on and off now. About 10 years. And even the States, when I come back here, I'm like, we have it so good here. Like, don't get me wrong, we have our issues, everywhere does.
But
in comparison, it's unbelievable how good we got it.
I agree. And the only place I found flying around where I was absolutely gobsmacked by how different it was Japan, to be honest. Don't you think the rest of the world is kind of similar, like in say sense of humor and things like that? Everyone's sort of quite similar around the world. And then you go to Japan, it's just like, my God, it's like an alien country.
It is, but the culture's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. The thing that blew my mind back then was no one spoke English. It was like, can you teach me English? Can you teach me English? I was like, probably not.
No, because I can't speak Japanese.
I mean, I just said no one. I think I should have said nobody, right? I can't even speak English myself.
Coming from Luton.
Exactly, from Luton and I.
Yeah.
When I moved to London, I got told to change the way I speak.
Really?
Yeah. By my neighbour, who's a banker. Did you won't survive around here speaking like that. I was like, okay. And I did, I changed.
Really? Where was your first place in London?
Clapham. I lived in Clapham for 10 years.
Yeah.
Nice. Clam. So, Clam, you can imagine. Darling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, some posh people.
It was great. I loved it. But
so when were you like, okay, I have to like stop doing jack of all trades and go into mixing?
So I moved to London because it was Phil Faversham said, move to London, the streets are paved with gold. Literally said that to me, and I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So I did at 29, I moved to London, and I moved into the studio next to Hal Ritson, which was 10 minutes from Ministry of Sound.
Yeah.
It was all, you know, it was all planned. It used to be Chase and Status's studio, actually. I moved in after them. It just kind of flowed from there, really. I started doing stuff for Ministry probably a few years before that. Obviously, it was all, I didn't just move there, on a whim.
Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of planned. And then it just got super crazy, to be honest, around that time.
Because I remember, I can't put a year on it, if I'm honest, but I remember when I heard you were mixing, when you'd become like the mixer.
Yeah.
And there was a period of time when like everyone was using you. I know everyone still uses you now, but there was it kind of came to like a point where I'm like, fucking hell, what's Wes doing?
What's going on? Because it's interesting to hear it from an outsider's perspective. Yeah. Because I wondered if people thought that as well. Where's this guy come from? He was DJing and now he's mixing. But actually I was always mixing.
Yeah, and we didn't know that from an outsider's point of view. Yeah,
and I thought people might think that's a bit strange. So that's why I stopped DJing, which was your question a minute ago. I stopped DJing when I was 30 because I thought people might think it waters down mixing. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, he's in clubs every weekend. How can he hear anything in the week?
Yeah. It's true.
Not true, to be fair.
Yeah.
I remember mixing Example's first album, or was it second album? I can't remember. With an ear infection, with one ear, I mixed the whole thing with one ear. I never told him. And it sounds really good. <He'll know that. laughs> it's amazing what you can do, though, isn't it? When you're limited, do you know what I mean? Like,
limitations are so key. I've got this thing. I've just finished working on a project, but I've got this thing where I want to write an album on like two pieces of gear and a vocalist, and just like, you have to use this drum machine.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? Because I think there's just so much out there now. Like,
that's why I love having the console.
Because
use the console. It's like, oh, I haven't got 75, plug-in EQs to choose from.
To be fair, when I produce, I do only use like one reverb. I only use one EQ. Yeah. I just can't be. I also, when I go into sessions with people and they have like one reverb on like a vocal, and then on the drums, they've got a different, completely different reverb, like different brand, different everything. I'm like, you're using two different rooms. The whole point of a reverb is that you're creating space for a room. If you use two different reverbs, it's not the same room, so it's not going to sound right.
100%.
It's weird, but I think it's also just because we have so much option. Same as music now, if you know what I mean. It's the same with Spotify. It's like, we have so much option out there. It waters it down.
Yeah, too many options.
But yeah, going back to the when that all kind of kicked off for you.
Yeah.
Was that around the Example stuff?
That was around, I reckon, 2014 was when it went crazy. I mean, that's when I did Clean Bandit and all the Jess Glynn stuff. Or maybe 2013, around that time. Me and Depeche were having so many number ones. I don't even know, maybe 10 in that year or something crazy. Do you know what I mean? It was like, it got to a point where I was like, oh, enough for number one. Do you know what I mean? Let's just go home and have a pizza. But looking back, like, that was the time. Do you know what I mean? That was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, sort of celebrated more, but you never do you? I always think, like, if you celebrate too hard, then you take your eye off the ball and you kind of become complacent. But
yeah, it's on to the next.
Yeah, and there was even a time where the head of music at Radio 1 was saying you need a Wes Clark mix if you want to get on the playlist. And that, like, that for me was when I thought, wow, what's going on here? Like, this, you know what I mean? That, you can't buy that kind of thing. We probably could if you had enough money.
Add a couple of zeros onto that coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, oh, my computer's doing some weird noise. Hang on a sec.
No worries.
There you go. Did that the other day. I hope it doesn't keep doing it.
That's a pretty... how does that feel, though?
I mean, looking back, it was amazing. But like I said, at the time, I just kind of was in the middle of it all. And it was so busy. Like, I was doing probably at least one or two mixes a day, every day, which was full on. You know, not every day. I was having weekends off. But I was doing... Around that period, I was doing 8 in the morning till 8 at night in the studio. And I won't lie, I wasn't enjoying it.
Makes sense.
I really wasn't enjoying it. I went into robot mode for a long time. I was having loads of... It was killing me, if I'm honest. It was absolutely killing me. The pressure, the hours, not seeing daylight, you know... 8 to 8, and I had no windows in my studio at the time. I've got windows now.
That's such an older thing to do. Is when you get older and it's like, I need windows in my studio. Yeah.
It shouldn't be an older thing though. You should learn that at school, shouldn't you?
I know, right? Yeah, but it's cool to have a dark studio.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
It also saps all the vibes out of everything. I hate it now.
Yeah, it's true. It is cool, isn't it, for some reason?
I think it's just like the stereotype of what a studio should look like.
Yeah, it shouldn't have windows. Yeah, and then you get older and you think, actually, I'm done with being cool.
Yeah.
I need a view.
Going back to the not enjoying it.
No, exactly. And you know, it's that classic burnout thing. I did burn out. I got ill. My body. I firmly believe that my body created an illness to tell me to slow down.
Yeah.
I got this cough and I thought, it's just cough. So I carried on working and the cough kept getting worse and worse. And eventually got something called costochondritis, which is where all your ribs basically dislocate from coughing too much.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, mate, it was so painful. And I remember waking up one morning and... I couldn't breathe. I don't know why I'm laughing. I couldn't breathe. And the only person I could call was my mum, and I couldn't talk or breathe. And she was like, "Are you all right?" And then she rang an ambulance.
Yeah.
Could tell something was going on. And then the ambulance driver came and he said, "If you don't slow down," weirdly enough, he looked at my gold discs on the wall and he said, "Are you a mixer?" Maybe he read it on the thing, but I don't know. It's a weird question, right?
That is a weird question.
It's completely out of blue. I said, "Yeah." And he said, he said, "If you don't slow down, you're going to die." That's literally what he said. He said, "I go to people like you every day. If you don't slow down, you'll die." And that for me was like, okay, say no more. So, from that day, I thought I'm only going to do one mix a day from now on.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Not doing two anymore. Yeah. I just sort of backed off a bit and thought, do you know what? I've been a bit greedy. I was being a bit greedy, if I'm honest.
I kind of want to challenge that though, because maybe you were being greedy, but I think there also comes a point in your career when you've worked God knows how long and you've earned a reasonable living, right? Like, you, as a headcount resident, you were earning okay money, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like,
at the time it was amazing money, right? It was like, geez, whereas I went from earning nothing.
Exactly. But then you go into overdrive, into mixing, and you go, okay, well, I'm earning a lot more money now, or just eventually. And then I don't know if you have this. I know I have this, but it's like, it's almost that take it now because you don't know how long it's going to last.
100%. Yeah.
And I think, yes, there is a level of, you could call that greedy to a certain extent, but it's also that, like, you have to realize that, no, actually, I have a skill and people are going to want this for the rest of their lives or for the rest of my career. But to realize that is so hard when you've done 10, 15 years of not earning any money doing the career, and also seeing everybody come up behind you. There's always somebody clapping away at your heels that want to take the job, that wants to do it a lot cheaper than you.
100%. Yeah. So yeah, maybe greed was the wrong word, but I fell into the trap of thinking, oh, if I do one mix a day, I earn this much. If I do two mix a day, I earn double. Do you know what I mean? It's why wouldn't you do two a day? Okay, I'll do that. But and to this day, to be honest, we've never said no. Me and my manager, I've had the same manager, Hannah Joseph, for years as well. We've never actually said no to any work because of, you know, too much work is on. We said no to things that I don't believe in or feel like I can bring anything to the table.
Totally.
I think that's important. But yeah, we just always just been like, yeah, we can do it. And like, you know, she's booking all this stuff in my diary. I'm like, yeah, we can do that. And it got to the point where I was like, oh, I can't do it. So I had a little bit of a burnout for a minute, and then it didn't last long, to be honest. I kind of got back into it and never hit it as hard.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, I'd never done drugs or anything like that. I wasn't like caning it and doing all this. Yeah. Like, the burnout was completely natural.
Just from pure work, overwork.
Yeah, it was. It was just pure work.
The burnout's real, though, because I think a lot of people don't talk about it in this industry. And I think it's a crazy industry to work in.
It is crazy. And, you know, when I DJed, I used to drink, but I'm glad I never did drugs, because I don't think I'd be here today.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, it would have been so full on. Just the traveling alone is killer, as you know. Yeah. You know, it's not easy.
Yeah, I don't drink and I don't do drugs. And all my mates that do around me, I'm like, I don't know how you guys are surviving that plane.
Especially, you know, as we get older, some of my mates are still doing that. I'm like, Jesus, you need to be careful now.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, but yeah, it's interesting that we're on a similar sort of thought process with the drink and drugs thing.
I think it's also people don't think about it in the grand scheme of things, because it's so part of the industry. It's so like,
yeah, and everyone I meet assumes I just,
yep.
They don't even ask me. They just assume that you must have done drugs when you were DJing. Yeah. Like, and I'm like, well, no, I didn't ever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a bit annoying actually when you meet, you know, new people and they assume that.
I think it's because it's so part of the culture. I think what annoys me the most is when people like question why, and also like, and try, and try and like push it on you. And I'm like, no, that's weird. But then they're just the people that I just don't hang around with.
It's just stupid questions, isn't it? It's like, it's never even entered my mind to do anything. And it's like, why don't you smoke? I don't think anyone would necessarily ask that, would they?
No,
why don't
not
you?
At all. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's really bad for you. And I've never felt the need to smoke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Same with drugs. It's like, why did you never do drugs? Yeah, it's, I don't know. To be fair, I mean, I'm sure they're great and fun in some respect, as long as you can keep them under control. But I don't think I would have been able to keep them under control.
That's the thing, isn't it?
That's my personality. I'm like all in, you know, with everything. I have to win at everything.
Yeah. But that's a really interesting mindset. Do you think that's why you became so successful in mixing?
100%. And I also, like, you know, going way back to childhood, I when all my mates were playing football every Sunday, I was BMX racing.
Yeah.
Which is very solo sport.
Yeah.
Just me. And I think that's quite interesting. Because working in music, well, especially as a mixer, especially, or maybe a mastering engineer, is such a solo.
Yeah.
It's quite a lonely, actually, existence. You know, I mean, I've never really had an assistant either. So I've literally been in rooms on my own most of my career, yeah. just sitting there, you know, with music all around me. Yeah, it's a weird existence. Which is probably why, yeah, I had that sort of time where I burnt out, because it was just, I think, you know, if I'd had someone there to bounce off, they might have picked up on it and said, totally. You need to slow down.
Chill out.
You know what I mean? It's like,
how does that work with relationships for you as well?
Outside. I mean, back then I couldn't have had a relationship at that time.
Yeah.
There's no way. And when I was DJing, I couldn't have either, because I was just never in the country.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been difficult. Didn't really settle down till sort of quite a lot later. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't change the path.
I was going to say, is there any like regret there? No,
I don't have any regrets.
That's good.
I honestly feel like I've never had a plan either. And I guess that's my theory, is if you don't have a plan, you can't regret anything, right? Because nothing's gone wrong, is it?
True.
It's like, I read somewhere the other day, someone said something to do with the way the universe is, everything you do is wrong. Like nothing you do can be right. It's just the way of the universe.
That's the biggest head fuck. It's the biggest head fuck.
I like it though. It's good, right?
Yeah.
Nothing you do is right. It can only be wrong. So stop trying.
Yeah, maybe that's where I'm going wrong. I set too many goals. And then it's like, and then you look at it.
If you don't reach them, you get down. I've never really had a plan. I've just meandered through life, but I've been really lucky, you know, or fortunate. I hate the word lucky, actually. I don't use it.
You've worked hard, man, for it, and it's been, it's paid off, right? It's like, that's what it's there for, and you can show that.
Thousands of hours, tens of thousands of hours of work. Yeah, it has been a hard slog.
What's it like winning a Grammy?
It's a funny one, winning a Grammy.
Yeah.
I remember someone said to me, you've won that too young. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you're too young to win a Grammy. I was like, wow.
Who was that? That person needs to fuck off.
No, I'm not going to say. But I thought it was a really pessimistic thing to say, but actually looking back, it's interesting. It's an interesting thing to say.
There's certain things in this career that I feel like if happens too young, yes, you're right. Like, I think a hit record too young is not good.
Yeah. I get it now. Yeah. And I get why they said that. I understand, because you can become complacent.
Yeah.
It's almost like, where'd you go from winning a Grammy? It's like you win another Grammy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. Yeah. There's like, but to be fair, my goal was never to win a Grammy. I'd never even thought about it until
it happened.
Or randomly, my manager did say that year, she said, what do you want to do this year? And I said, win a Grammy. And then we won a Grammy, which was pretty weird.
That's cool.
I just read The Power of Now as well.
Oh, really?
Wait, that book changed my life as well.
Did it really? I've not listened to it or read it.
I've not listened to it.
I don't read books. I never read books. I hate reading.
There's one book you read in your life. Read The Power of Now.
I'm going to listen to it. Because I listen to the audiobooks.
I listen to it a lot. I probably read it for the first time 10 years ago, and I listen to it, you know, daily.
Yeah, really?
On repeat, yeah. It doesn't do what it did back then, but back then it just blew my mind. It was like, oh, live in the moment. Like, no one had ever talked about it before. I was like, all right, what's that about then? And, you know, you kind of do it without thinking sometimes, but a lot of the time you're not.
It's very like my record label is called All We Have Is Now.
I noticed,
like, it's a big thing for me to like try and live in the moment.
100%.
But it's fucking hard.
It's fucking hard. But one thing I always think, which blows my mind, is technically from the day you're born to the day you die, you're in the same moment.
Yeah.
Well, it's just one continuous moment. The only thing
deep,
that breaks
man.
It up.
That's deep.
The fact that you sleep every night is the only thing that makes you think, oh, it's a different day, isn't it? Like, otherwise, you'd just be continuously living in the same moment.
That's weird to think about that.
It is weird to think about, but I think about it quite a lot. I don't know why.
No, I like that concept.
Yeah.
But
there is only one moment and you're in it.
Yeah. I guess my question for you, because going through your career, we all do things we don't want to do. And you kind of have to do things that you don't want to do because that's just the way life is, right?
Yep.
Is there a part of your career that you don't like doing that you still have to do?
Now?
Yeah. Or if there isn't, when was it when you were like, I'm just going to stop doing all of that?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Yeah, I must admit, I didn't like, really, if we want to go really specific, I didn't like vocal editing and comping and auto-tuning. That whole thing for me was just a chore.
Yeah.
Some people absolutely smash it, and some people charge way more money than I charge for a mix just to do that job. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's a thing. But for me, it was a chore. And I hated it, especially recording vocals as well. Jeez. But yeah, it's something I had to do sometimes, you know, to get the mix work. I had to record the vocals on it to, you know.
Yeah.
But now, no, there's nothing really. The sort of the major ball ache before was printing stems after your mix, you know, and historically, that was quite a long job, took hours. But now I've streamlined the way I work and it just takes one pass and I've printed stems. So, you know, I think the older you get, the wiser you get, I suppose, and, and the more streamlined your approaches. Workflow.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing, though, if you look back at it, like you can go into your studio every single day and enjoy everything you do. Mm. That's the goal, right?
Yeah, it is. And you do have to keep reminding yourself how amazing it is. It's like what you said, how good we've got it in England compared to some countries in the world. Like just actually yesterday, Monday. On Sunday, I was driving and I was going to Soho Farmhouse actually just to show like how you know, you're nice so life bougie. Is. I'm not a member, by the way.
You're not a member? Okay, good. We can still be friends.
I'm not a member. I was just going for the ride, but I was just driving along thinking, it's great, isn't it? Yeah. Life's great. And not for any particular reason. The sun was out. Yeah. That was what I was thinking. Do you know what I mean? It's not because I'm sitting there going to Soho Farmhouse, but it just felt, I don't know. I just had a moment.
Yeah.
No, I think you need to.
You need to, man. And like, it's weird. It's really weird, this industry, and it's life's strange generally, but I think it's very easy to look at everybody else around you, right, and compare yourself to everybody in this industry. And I know that's the same for other industries, but I can only really talk about ours because it's all I know. It's very easy to kind of go through that and like, oh, that person's doing that. Why can't I do that? Or why aren't I there? Or like, I'm happy for them that they've got that, but I should be doing this or I should be doing something similar. And then when you really sit back and just be like, you know what? I'm doing what I love. And sometimes I don't know about you, but like I've lost the love for it a lot, a few times where I'm just like, more so recently, where you're just like, what is all this for, if you know what I mean? But I think if you sit down and reflect, it's like we have it pretty fucking good.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think it's important. One thing you said there is the competition thing. I think it's important in life in general, isn't it? Not to be in competition. What is it? The comparison is the
thief killer of joy.
Killer of joy.
Yeah, thief of joy, yeah.
Thief of joy, is that right? Yeah. It's so true. It's so true.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how successful you get, how much gear you get, you know, how much equipment, how many number ones you've had. There's always
someone
to compare yourself with and feel really bad about yourself. It's like, it's partly why I ended up buying this bloody console, because I had a small one before and I felt really inferior. So I was like, I rang SSL. I was like, I want the bigger one, but I don't know if it will fit in my room. And Mike at SSL was like, yeah, it will.
But as sold. You know,
I already measured it. I measured it last time I was down. He knew that phone call was coming. So funny. They've got you. They've just got you
by the balls, mate. Got you by the balls.
I knew that phone call was coming. So funny. He'd already paced out my room, so he knew it would fit.
I was at a car dealership yesterday. And they're exactly the same. They just know. They know.
They know they'll start you off on this.
Yeah.
And you're back for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
I respect it. Like,
yeah.
To a certain extent, I'm like, yeah. But you've got a fucking nice desk.
Well, yeah. I have now.
Do you use it all day?
I feel fulfilled now.
Do you use it all?
I use it every day, yeah.
No, but do you use all of it?
Oh, well, someone asked me the other day, do you turn every button, like turn every knob and push every button? No.
Looks good, though.
There's definitely certain ones I've never touched.
Yeah.
But I use it every day. Yeah, I use every channel every day.
Yeah.
And I will do till the end of my career, I'm sure. Yeah. So, like the NS10s I've got, I've used those every day since 1997.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
So, I can't stand those speakers. I don't know why everyone loves them.
I don't think anyone loves them.
They just sound awful.
They sound shit, but that's
the whole point. Yeah, I know. I get it.
I've got my good speakers and then I've got my bad speakers. They're not bad, actually. They're good. They're just like I always see them as like a section of sound. They're this section, do you know what I mean? Rather than, they do what they do.
I guess my question is, are people listening on worse speaker or on the same level of NS10s nowadays? I don't think they are. I think everything is better than them.
Probably the iPhone speakers better.
Literally,
better frequency range. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Maybe I should get rid of them.
No, don't get rid of them. You love them. It's fine. I just won't be buying any.
It's just 20 odd years, 25, 27 years of hearing them.
Yeah,
it's like
just know
my brain. My brain knows what they sound like. Yeah. Same with this. So where are you? This. Little tiny speaker I used to have next to my bed for 10 years in London that I woke up with it every morning.
Yeah.
Know how music should sound on it. So it's in my studio.
It's funny that because I've toyed for years to get new monitors in my studio. And because I have a place here and I have a place in Detroit. And
where are you now?
I'm in England at the moment.
How are you? Okay.
Yeah. And.
Oh, hence the cushion around you.
Yeah. I don't know why there's a Scottish cushion there because I'm not Scottish, so like at all. Yeah. I don't know why I think somebody bought that for me. I don't know why.
You're not calm either. But calm. Yeah. No, I'm just. Calm and carry on. Keep calm
and carry on.
All I can see is calm and carry.
But yeah, I was always worried about that as well. It's like I know these monitors so well.
What have you got?
Just Adam A7.
I mean,
they're not the best.
Stick with them.
Yeah,
but it doesn't matter. I've got these I didn't even know how to say it. Guy Thane RL901Ks I use. With the subs. And when I bought them, Olaf, who makes the speakers, said to me, you sure you want the subs? Nobody has the subs. And I was like, that's why I want the subs.
Yeah.
He's like, they won't be flat anymore. I was like, I don't want flat. I want nightclub.
Yeah.
But these speakers for me, the first time I heard them, I went in the shop to buy Barefoots.
Yeah.
I just had it in my head. I wanted a pair of Barefoots.
Of course. It's the go-to, right?
Yeah, or Adams. Yeah. Was it Adams?
The big ones.
Can't remember. No, it wasn't. I can't remember what it was. It was
ATC.
It was six speakers. I was. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. I think it was those. But they're not the big ones, the smaller ones. And I went in and compared them, and they sounded so different to each other. I was just confused as hell. I was like, Barefoot sounded one way, and these other ones sounded one. So I was like, I don't really know where I stand now. I'm confused. And I went upstairs, and just before I left, the guy was like, "Oh, you should listen to these Guy Fanes." He said, "You won't want to mix on them, but just have a listen." And I sat there, and I went, "Jesus Christ!" Like that. You know when something just feels like home. Like,
yeah.
You know when you meet someone, you feel like you know them. It's that kind of vibe. And they were like double the price of Beth. So I was like, I had to buy them.
Get them. Are they the ones that are like hand built?
I don't know if they're hand. It's funny because I bought them in the end from direct from.
It's Sweden. Is it in Sweden?
Germany.
I'm thinking.
Guy Thane is the village they're made in.
Okay, I'm thinking of something else. Yeah.
And so the guy Olaf, I was dealing with to buy them. I thought he was the salesperson, but it turned out he made them as well. I said because I had when he sent them to me, one of them had a little issue on transit, and I said, oh, who do I speak to? And he said, me, speak to me. I was like, okay. It's like a one man band.
Love that.
I think they're pretty big in Germany though. But oh man, these speakers, I always think they're the best speakers in the world. And my old stepdaughter, previous stepdaughter, I don't know how to even say it, my ex-stepdaughter, my ex's daughter, she said to me, she came in my studio and she was like, oh, my granddad's got those speakers. And I said, nah, your granddad won't have those speakers. Anyway, my granddad came to visit one day and he walked in and he was like, I've got those speakers. I was like, what? And he said, they're the best speakers in the world, aren't they? And I was like, that's what I tell everyone.
Really? I've never heard of the brand.
No, well, yeah, I'm selling them here.
Are you on a commission, like an affiliate link?
5%.
Yeah. No, speakers are a strange one because realistically, the more you spend, the better you get. That I feel like that is the case with speakers.
Yeah. I don't know though, because it's like £1 million speakers, aren't they? And it, surely.
True. Like there's a level.
At that point, I've seen these £1 million sound systems and they're in such shit rooms.
Yeah.
But what's the point in that?
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't treated your room at all and you just got this weird sound system in there.
How have you treated your room?
That's a good question. I was about to say I haven't treated it, but I have. I didn't really need to treat it because when I moved in, it was translating pretty well, but it was a bit light. But then I've got these things. And this whole back thing is a massive
diffuser.
It's a membrane absorber. The front of it's sort of diffusing. Behind it there's a huge rubber membrane absorber, and then behind that there's a stack of probably 11 stacks of rock wall.
Oh wow.
And it's all hidden nicely.
Yeah, it looks great.
But it did wonders for the room. There's a lot of rock wall in this room hidden away. And it's got really high ceilings, like 3.5 meters, I think they are high, which is probably the key, actually, to a good room. You've got high ceilings there as well, I see.
Yeah, these are like...
Is it vaulted?
Yeah, really high. Well, yeah.
It's so important because most people neglect the ceiling height. You know, they're like, oh, dimensions of the room, but they forget about the height. Yeah. And then you end up with your speakers, most rooms are 2.4 meters high, mm-hmm. and your speakers are at ear level, halfway between the ceiling and floor.
Yeah.
just get all sorts of problems.
Yeah, my place in Detroit, I got an acoustician to come in and do it because it sounded so awful, but it was lower ceiling. And
yeah,
my speakers still sound terrible in there because the room's so big.
Yeah, but I always say, like, just get your speakers out of that middle between, you know, if you can lower them and then lower your chair, you might end up like sitting like this monitoring.
Yeah,
but yeah, it will sort a lot of the problems out. I did studio design at university, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I don't really remember much, but it's such a grey art, to be honest. Acoustics, but. Yeah, that was what my dissertation was on, studio design.
So did you design yours or did you get somebody else to do it?
I didn't really design this. It just kind of, I moved into this room when I bought this house.
So it's in your house?
Yeah, it's sort of on the, it's connected to my house. Yeah. It's not in the house as such. But it's an old library. It's an old Georgian house. And this was the library originally. So I moved the console in here temporarily when I moved in. I was going to build a huge studio in the garden. But then everyone that came in was like, oh, your studio's wicked.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, it's quite cool, isn't it? And then I realised it actually sounds quite good as well, for various reasons, because of the high ceilings. It's kind of surrounded by other rooms. Like behind here there's a corridor.
Okay.
It's a weird setup, and underneath there's like storage units, so it's like a floating room. Just somehow bass sounds good in here, and when you're outside you can't hear it just disappears somewhere. It's like the magical room. Yeah, even if you're in the living room next door you can't hear any
really?
Bass. It's like, yeah, it's the weirdest thing. And you know, I've got four 16-inch subs in there.
Four.
So, yeah. Yeah, well, probably two working, to be fair. I think when you connect the top two to the bottom two, I think it probably creates them as a mid. But, yeah, I have...
That's a good amount of subs.
Yeah. That's what Olaf said. It's too much. But he gave me the remotes to turn them off. He was like, you know, and I've never turned them off.
Just constantly.
Literally, never. I pressed play and I was like, "Jeez, that's how it sounds." I had them without the sub maybe 6 years, and then I got the subs and I was like, "That's it."
There's something about a good sub. I've got a really I don't have subs in this studio, in my Detroit studio. I bought a really shit cheap sub, and it's not good. But when you go into a room and it's like all sounds warm and you're just like, "Oh, this is heaven." I used to use Optimum Mastering in Bristol, and I went in and did a few like in-person mastering sessions, and he's got like the PMC stack, the like big fucking, and you just go in there and you're like, this just sounds amazing.
Yeah, I love those. Yeah, Metropolis have those.
Yeah.
Beast, so to speak.
How much of a game changer is it having your studio in your house?
Game changer or game killer? It's kind of pros and cons.
Yeah.
I think it's potentially a relationship killer. it was during COVID, at least. It was difficult during COVID because obviously, well, I've split up with my partner, who I was with then. And, it's just a lot of pressure coming in here every day. And, you know, we had three children and they were out there and, I was in here in my own little world, and then sort of walked into this other world every evening. I was like, whoa.
What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard. It's hard from that respect. But obviously there's pros and cons. You know, I roll out of bed. It's like you said, I speak to you in 20 earlier. And I was like, oh, I didn't realise.
Yeah.
Well, we were speaking in 2 hours. But I'm here. Do you know what I mean?
It's
in the house. You're just sort of always there, and you can dip in and out, you know. When I was in London, I guess it suits me now at my stage of life. When I was in London, it was more regimented. You know, I went to work and I was there all day
and left.
Yeah. I kind of did. I ended up kind of doing like 10 till 6.
Yeah.
That was my day. Never worked weekends. I think that's important. Obviously not if you're a DJ, but could be an issue.
That's the thing I struggle with, is actually doing the day off.
Yeah, when do you have a day off?
I don't.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, but it's more so I've never really liked taking days off because I'm like, what the fuck do I do?
Like, I don't like it either, but my manager taught me it's you've got to do it.
Yeah.
And she just never let me work weekends, and it was, I feel like, yeah, that's really important.
Well, I think the thing that for me that I struggle with the most, and it's almost like I kind of have like two lives, one in England and one in America.
Yeah.
And my life in America is very selfish. It's like, it's just around me, just me. Like I've got a few friends where they in Detroit where I live, but like it's just me. And then in the UK, obviously I grew up here. I have all my family here. I have like all my old friends and everything like that. So it's a lot less selfish. But also when you actually have a day off, it's like then just filled with everything. Because it's like you have to see everybody. You have to, because you're not. I'm not here for that long, so it's not. I'm complaining, but it's just. It's the one thing I need to learn to do, and I do really want to work on like accepting that like I don't have to be in the studio every day.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's important, but it is difficult. Yeah, it is something you need to accept as well. That's a good word, because your brain tells you, oh, I should be doing something. I should be working on getting where I want to be. Or, do you know, I mean, everyone else is doing it. Everyone else is working. But it's that burnout thing, you know. It's, you don't want to burn out. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Been there and it's not nice.
Yeah, it's not fun.
No.
It's not fun at all.
Your body will create an illness. That is my belief. If it wants you to stop, it will make you stop somehow.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be a bad illness.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few going around at the moment. You just like a few artists and you're like, fuck. Like, you just, it's so unfortunate. So unfortunate just to see. And you're just like, yeah, it makes sense.
Actually, yeah, no, you're right. I see a few people I've worked with over the years right now that are going through some awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard to watch, but also there's the sort of mental side of it as well, isn't there, that not so obvious, but
totally. That's the thing. I think that's the worst, to be fair, because it's like, it's so although mental health is fashionable to talk about and everything like that, but like it's hard to see it if you're a manager, if you're an agent, if you're an artist, if you're a friend. It's easy just to keep going, right? It's
really hard. You know, you look at Avicii, you know, it's hard to say, I can't do this gig tonight because my mental health's not in the right place. You can't, do you know what I mean? No one's going to take you seriously, are they? If you say, I've got a broken leg, well, maybe it's not working. Fair enough. But I'm not feeling up to it tonight. It's not really a good enough excuse.
It's weird. And I think the thing is as well, it's not just one gig that you're not feeling up to. It's probably the whole year that you don't actually want to do. And it's just like a case of like, you know what, I actually just need to stop for a year. But but then also I think the way I look at it as well is like, it's not just me. If I don't turn up to work, my whole team don't earn money.
Exactly. That was the problem Avicii had, wasn't it? Like the pressure of the team, not trying not to let them down. But yeah, it's like, I only mentioned Avicii because I did a few tracks of him in Ministry of Sound Days, and it's just like so sad, you know.
Especially when it's like somebody so talented, but also like so influential at that time, right? Like I guess the positive, there's no positive, but if you wanted to look at a positive, like the impact that somebody like him had on the world is pretty. Kurt Cobain, classic example, right? Like a lot of these artists, Amy Winehouse. Like, there's a reason why they're so fucking good.
Yeah.
There's a reason. And there's not many people that survive it that are that special.
I agree. Yeah. it's like, you know, yeah, there comes a point where you're human again. Yeah. So you're only human.
Yeah.
Not superhuman. If you were superhuman, you could survive it, right?
Yeah.
But none of us are. So I feel like, yeah, that's the ceiling, isn't it? When you start suffering, and you, if you can notice it and pull back,
yeah,
you'll get through it.
Right. Yeah. Is noticing. How important is it for you of having a good team around you? Because you mentioned you've been with your manager for forever.
Yeah, it's really just me and her, to be honest. And it's been so important. I can't sing her praises enough. We've never had an argument, you know, never had a crossword, just 100% trust all those years. I feel like even she came into my life sort of by, you know, I don't know, the universe, whatever. Yeah. I said to Depeche, I just finished DJing. Why did I stop DJing? I stopped DJing in the end for two reasons, because of my ears and also because Head Candy cut all the DJ fees. If I'm perfectly honest.
Fuckers.
Overnight, they're just half the DJ fees. Oh, and I was like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
And then I was making all the Head Candy albums as well.
Yeah.
I did 50 albums. I'm probably saying too much. I'm oversharing here, but they halved that fee as well. And I was like, fuck that as well.
Yeah.
So suddenly I'm like, okay, I've stopped DJing. I've stopped making these albums. That was my bread and butter. I'm like, shit, what do I do? Luckily I'd had some success with Example. So I said to Depeche at Ministry, I said, I need a manager. Who do you recommend? And he said, oh, what about Hannah Joseph? I don't know why, it was just in his mind. And so I approached her thinking, I honestly thought she wouldn't give me the time of day.
Yeah.
She worked for 360 at the time.
Yeah.
She's huge, huge company. And it's like a big thing. But yeah, it was the total opposite. It was like, oh, like 100% interest. Oh, you're having success here. Well, let's go with it, you know.
Yeah.
And I've learned since the time to get a manager is when you're blowing up, not when you're looking to blow up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? 100%. Don't go to a manager to give you a career. You go to a manager when you can't handle your career.
Yeah.
And so I was having some success with Example, and I've done all these mixes. I think I've done Riverside and Crookers and all those things. So yeah, there was something there that she saw, and she went on and built it. Not immediately, but you know.
It takes time.
Yeah, it does take time. But eventually, yeah, I mean, it's just worked, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's important to find someone you can trust, I guess, is the main.
Yeah, yeah.
The main thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The manager.
How do you manage your, this might be a bit of a personal question to tell me if it is or not. You don't have to talk about it.
I haven't been very personal so far.
I don't want to know numbers and stuff, but how do you manage your finances when it comes to your career? Because we all know that sometimes it can be a busy time and sometimes it can't. And I know that you're always busy, but I think there comes a point, it's like, okay, you earn more money, you buy a bigger house, your expenses go up, right? And like, you live a life that's 100%. Yeah. How have you managed that?
I'm probably not the best person to talk to. I like everybody, well, not everybody else, but some people are, you know, I started earning good money, and then I started buying loads of gear and and then, you know, bought a flat in London, then bought a house in London, and then bought a big house in the countryside. And it's like, I've probably stretched myself a bit too far over the years, you know. It's a really good question you're asking there. Mm. And the answer is, I wish someone had guided me a bit more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm here on my own in this house now, and it's like, it's just ridiculous.
Just
I'm
don't go- need I'm, it.
I'm probably gonna. You know, when I moved in, it was like three kids and a partner. But yeah, now it just seems ridiculous. But yeah, there's no one really guiding you like in that in that department. And it's, I think it's really important. Because you do have peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
In your career for sure. Yeah. Maybe the answer is not to stretch yourself fully.
Mm.
You know,
it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I like it. It also goes back to that power of now thing. It's like, there's also that level of like, you work your ass off and there comes a point when you're like, what am I doing all this for? Right.
Yeah. I remember that point. Yeah.
Like for me, that's where I'm at. It like being like completely honest, that's where I'm at in my career now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what are you doing all this for if you're just constantly just on the go and not actually.
Yeah. I remember that moment though. And I was living in like a shared house in London, working on all these hit records, and I was just thinking, what am I doing? And then I went to see a mortgage advisor and she was like, oh, you've got enough saved to buy a house. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get my head around the fact that you don't buy a house. I don't know why. This is the most ridiculous thing. I lived in London where nothing, there was no houses below £1 million. Yeah. And I was like, how am I ever going to afford a house?
Yeah, yeah.
How am I going to save £1 million?
Yeah.
I didn't think, oh, you get a mortgage. That's yeah. Not people get a mortgage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just, my brain didn't work like that. I was like, how am I ever going to save £1 million? I was trying to save £1 million. This was never going to happen. But yeah, so in the end, it was like, yeah. She was like, oh, you've got enough for a deposit on a house, you can get a mortgage. Just like, I was like, ah, oh, now it all makes sense. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that for me was all it was. It was just like, almost like joining the real world. This is what real people do. Oh, they buy it. All my mates have bought houses. Like now I can do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I totally, totally get it, man. And it's a weird, I think just generally we aren't taught about finances. I'm not talking music industry, I'm talking life. Like I literally listened to a podcast yesterday, and like I've luckily, like my parents always told me to save and everything like that, and kind of I've always been reasonably good with money. But this podcast, I was like, some of the things that they were saying, I was like, why is this not being taught? If you know what I mean, like talking about investing, if you know what I mean. And they did this like calculator, if you invested like £500 a month for 40 years into a fund, like you're coming out with like 2 million.
Yeah. And that's your retirement.
And that's your retirement. And you're just like, fuck, why aren't all these things being taught to people? And especially like for me, like managers, teams and everything like that, why aren't they kind of teaching their artists this? Why aren't you guys having these conversations? It's like,
I think some managers and they feel a little bit out of place talking about it, and or you don't want to look like you're jealous, or I don't know what it is, but I do feel like, you know, people are going to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, oh, don't, I don't think you should buy that house. Is anybody going to say that to you? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, to be honest, buying a house is actually good. I've got a good accountant and he's behind me with the house buying. He said to me once, and the consult, he was like, if you come to me and said I want to buy a Lamborghini, I'd probably try and dissuade you. Do you know what I mean? But an SSL consult, yeah, go for it. Do you know what I mean?
He's just your best mate, isn't he? So that's
he's good. But yeah, he would. I like to think my accountant would tell me if I was about to do something stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely needs to be taught at schools. Maybe it is now.
I don't know. Think it is.
No?
No, I don't think it is.
What are they teaching people at school? French.
Well, yeah, but if you think about it, like, do you use anything from school? Apart from English.
It's a tough question, isn't it? Because you learn a lot at school.
You learn a lot of life. At
isn't
school.
Taught exactly. Isn't yeah. taught in the classroom. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. Am I using Pythagoras' theorem daily?
Absolutely not. It's got a phone for that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
ChatGPT. Oh,
you won't always have a calculator on you. That's what they used to say.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Funny that.
Got it on your wrist now. Exactly. Yeah, it's mad. It's mad. Do you ever do like in-person mixdowns where people are in the room with you? Do you like doing that?
Rarely. I don't like doing it. And I normally get the mix to a point before people come in and do tweaks. Mm. But yeah, no, I've not really, and I've not done, I recently started doing masterclasses for A&R actually.
Oh, cool.
Which is quite a cool thing.
What's A&R?
So record label, you know.
Oh, for A&Rs.
For A&Rs,
I thought,
yeah.
Sorry, I thought A&R was like a YouTube channel or something like that. Or like
No. Record label A&Rs. So yeah, you know, I know. I thought you was asking for the listeners.
No.
A&R is someone who signs artists at a record label for people. So yeah, I've been doing masterclasses for them, but to benefit sort of everyone, like, so they can learn the lingo.
Because they're so absolute they wankers.
I can't say that. You never said that, did you? No, because a lot of the... I'm going to be so diplomatic now, and you're going
to
edit that.
You don't have to be diplomatic.
I do.
You don't, though, because they all know. Like, I've got friends at A&R.
They all know.
They all know. It's like... They all know. Yeah, like, I love them. Amazing. I love them, but...
Let's add that bit in. We love them.
I do.
But, yeah. A lot of them don't necessarily know a lot of the lingo they're using. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, can you compress that more? Can you sidechain that more?
Yeah.
What can you I'm not even going to say some of them because some of them are so ridiculous and specific to certain people that they would know if they're listening, they'd know I'm talking about them and I just can't do it. But I've had some howlers. Absolute howlers over the years. And I just thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to get them in and teach them.
No, it's really interesting. And I actually like it because I think there's a lack of, this is the thing. And I know you're working a lot more with majors, but it's really interesting for like me where I don't really work with majors and we're starting to work with majors like over the last year or two.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting the relationship between the A&R and the artist and like how that relationship is bonded. And there does come a point when an A&R will say something and you as the artist, it's actually like really fucking offensive sometimes and it, or just completely laughable where you're kind of, it sounds horrible to say, but your kind of respect for them is just like goes out the window for a certain point because you're like, what's this fucking guy doing? He doesn't know, or what's this girl doing? They don't have a fucking clue what they're talking about. And I think there is a level of like, okay, you want to be an A&R, you have to educate yourself to a certain level. I'm not asking you to be a producer. I'm not asking you to be an engineer. I'm asking for your ears. Like also, maybe like don't try and be technical if you don't know it and be honest. Like I'm not a technical person.
Yeah. I don't know what sidechain compression is, but can we put some on it?
Yeah.
Just be honest.
You would hate me. I never use compression.
You never use compression?
No, I know.
Well, just in general.
Generally, yeah.
I love that. I don't hate that. I love that.
I never use it.
You know what? I started my career for the first probably 7 years without a compressor. I didn't have one because it was pre-VST.
Yeah.
And do you know how I got around it? I just made everything fucking loud.
Yeah.
Turn the gain up. Yeah. It's got no headroom. It's compressing.
Yeah.
All of my records had distorted hats, distorted bass, distorted vocals.
That's a vibe.
Yeah. It was a vibe. It was wicked. Why don't you have a compressor though? They're definitely attainable now.
I just don't. I don't fully understand them.
Interesting.
And
I did it all at university.
Yeah, so like
I learned how to break the rules.
Yeah, like I understand what they do totally, yeah. But for me, it's like if I can make it sound great without using anything, like does it need anything? Technically, probably yes.
Well, no. No. If it sounds great without it, why does it need it?
Because it probably would sound even better if we used it.
Or greater.
Yeah. But like, yeah. That's always been a thing for me is like, if I use EQ a lot, but yeah.
As well, like I'm not afraid of EQ. No. You know, I don't do that subtractive bollocks. I just EQ the arse out of it.
Yeah. If it sounds good, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Simple.
But same with compression. I don't really, when I whack a compressor on it, I don't necessarily have it compressing. That sounds weird. I don't know what it does, but it does something.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. Is like, I'm like, can I tell the difference? If I can tell the difference and it makes it better, then yes, yeah. I use it.
I mean, for me, like these outboard, I use these Wes Audio 76 is they're called, yeah. On vocals. You chuck that on a vocal and it just sounds like a finished vocal.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? For me, it's like, it's just easy. You put that on it, put a bit of reverb on, bit of EQ, dash, your finished vocal. Yeah, it sounds
great,
amazing. Do you know what I mean? So
when I've used it separate studios, like in London or something, and they have like a vocal chain, you're like, okay, this sounds way better than what I would be able to record in my studio.
Yeah,
100%.
And I have a vocal chain as well. Yeah, it goes through various things really subtly.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've got it going through the Manly Verimew. The Beta 76 is the SSL Fusion.
Yeah.
I think
that's the thing for me that I would be way better at is if it was like just outboard and it was just more hands on and being like, okay, I twist this knob and like I can hear a difference and I can make.
I don't think I'd be any good in the box now either. I tried it recently just for speed. Someone's like, oh, can you just do a vocal mix on this? And I thought, I'll try it. I'll just do it in the box. And I just felt really lost.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, I couldn't tell if it sounded right or not. So then I loaded it on the console. I was like, oh, yeah,
that's better. Yeah.
Where I am. Do you know what I mean?
I think that would be the thing for me to like get more into it is just like get more outboard stuff. But then when you're on the road all the time,
you need some more synths.
Probably. This one's just a MIDI thing though, because I've just worked on a project and I had like a keys player come in, and I can play the keys kind of, but I'm not like full on keys player.
Right.
And they wanted
so
like,
you got weighted,
they
MIDI.
Want no, it's not even weighted. He just wanted like actual full length keyboard because it's like then you don't have to press the octave up all the time.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I just always use the sub 37.
I had a wall of synths as well. I got addicted to buying synths.
Did you?
in around 2008, around there. I just had a wall of them and 808, 909. You've got an 808 up there?
I've got the clone. This drum machine that you can't really see. This is the best though. It's the ADS7 AVP.
Ooh.
It's German. They make like 50 of them and then just like hand make them, and then they like put an email out going, we've just made a bunch, who wants one?
Jeez.
And they're amazing. Sounds so really? Good. Yeah, sounds so German, like so Russian. Sorry. I to be fair though, the sub 37 is amazing, like the Moog sub 37.
Yeah, Moog's always just best. I used to use I had a mirror, what's that? Little Fatty, is it?
Sub Fatty or the Little Fatty?
Little Fatty, I think.
Yeah.
I used to use that for bass on everything. Like, around the... When I did Hot Right Now, we did the bass with that DJ Fresh and 808 for the snare on that.
I didn't know you did that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Did mix it, and I did some production on it as well. Like, the snare, you know, there's an 808 snare and kick on there. Is it 909? Can't remember what we use now. Maybe 909. Or maybe the kick off one and the snare off the other. I can't remember. And and the bases off the little fatty. It's just solid. Sounds solid. Anything analog to me just sounds solid, especially on a low octaves when you go down. It just keeps the solidity.
No, you do
that on a, if you do that on a VST synth,
don't get it.
Oh, it just disappears as you go down, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's
a fake sub.
And are you the same about external gear, yeah, like compression, EQ, reverb? Yeah.
I don't use plugins, yeah.
I've worked with Steve Dubbs a few times.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're mates with him or anything, but
I feel like my manager used to manage him, Steve Dubb.
Yeah. Does all the Cam stuff and Moby stuff.
I feel like my manager used to manage him for me. Yeah.
And he was the first person that I've like sat in a room with that used SSL desks.
Yeah.
And it was just like absolute game changer, to be fair. It does make me want to buy one, but
go and buy one. Your accountant will
hate me.
Yeah, it's probably a depreciating asset, to be fair.
I don't know if it is though, is it? Because like
it is. That's not high. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It ain't going up in value.
True, I guess.
But it does make money.
Yeah.
So but it's fun and it sounds good. I think the fun bit is the most important part, right?
Yeah.
It's just sitting in front of this every day, it's just fun.
That's amazing. That makes me happy to hear that, because I think it's very easy when you've been doing it for so long to get jaded and to like, and just to be like, oh, here's another fucking mix. I get it sometimes where I'm just like, oh, fucking hell, I've got to write another record, or I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And for me, it's like, how do I find that fun in it again? And from now, I've worked it out that it's like working with other people, because I've never worked with people. I've always just been Lone Ranger in my studio by myself.
Right.
And working with people, like getting in a room with people and just like having a laugh, that's way more fun to me.
Yeah, 100%. I remember that. I remember that feeling.
Mate, we've just done an hour and a half. I absolutely love this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on, man. How can people, do you use social media at all?
I'm on Instagram, just Wes Clark. On Instagram, I'm not on Twitter or anything, but
probably good.
I'm around.
Probably a good thing not being on Twitter.
No, I am on Twitter, but I'm not on Twitter. Yeah. But I'm not on Facebook or any of those.
Nice, man. Those things. Dude, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, man.
Keep in touch. Great.
Yeah, you too.
And I'll see you soon. Big love. Peace. And that's a wrap. Big love to Wes. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening. If you did like it, please subscribe. Please give us a review. And also, if you want to get involved in the community, hit the link in the description. Keep safe. See you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.